What goes on behind the scenes in Pacific politics and how does it affect us? PolyTalk is back to unpack the big questions, like why is no one talking about PNG's political refugee crisis?
I can't even call it an election. It was something like a criminal thug war.
Join me, Scott Whitey, as I chat all things Pacific politics on PolyTalk.
Search up PolyTalk in your favorite podcast app to listen.
This is an ABC podcast.
As soon as I land back at home, I feel I don't have to be anyone but myself. Because when you're here, sometimes when you're away from home, especially in Australia, sometimes when you try to explain something, you're mindful of how the recipient will receive it. So you have to have a conversation where you probably don't really say what you need to say.
Yeah.
So when I'm home, I feel I'm home now, and it's a different feeling. It's a feeling that word cannot express.
For many across the Pacific, our islands and villages are central to how we identify and connect with one another. Whether it's Moana or Wan Solwara, Pacific Islanders carry a deep pride in our island homes, even when we migrate to faraway places. So how does being part of a diaspora, living away from ancestral lands, shape our ideas of who we are and where we belong? I'm Natasha Metten. Sisters, let's talk about maintaining our Pacific identity while living abroad. Auntie Sana Rihanna Balai is a Bougainville elder, art scholar, and curator based in Brisbane, Australia. Growing up, she was always curious about Australia, and when she would ask her father about it, he'd encourage her to go there and learn for herself. That she did, and decades later, she's still there. But her home will always be her island in the autonomous region of Bougainville.
I was born on a little island called Buka Island, which is north of Bougainville itself, in a village called Lemankoa Village. It's my father's village, even though my cultural village, my real village, or where my mother comes from, because we're a matriarchal system, is Lontis. But I was born in Lemankoa Village on Buka Island, mm-hmm. and it was a really beautiful childhood. You see, I was born with a hole in the heart, and I was not expected to live past 5 years, but 67 years on, I'm still here.
Yeah. Yes. What did you know about Australia prior to heading here?
I've always known about Australia because my father was highly associated with Australia. He actually went to study in Sydney. So I remember growing up, it was always something we talked about because he would tell us about his experience here. And then one day when I grew up, I was about 6 or 7, I asked him, "Dad, what does Australia look like?" And he said, "It's for me to know and for you to find out." So I've always been interested what Australia was like. My other siblings, my brother Joe, went to Wagga Wagga High School in the 60s. So it was an inspiration to come and see what Australia was, because my father and parents had always said that if we wanted to find out about something, to know about something, it was for us to find out. So it was a mystery to me. So I wanted to find out what Australia was like.
Yes.
And here I am.
And what were your impressions of Australia when you first moved?
To be really honest, I think my impression growing up, because all the stories that we knew about Australia was about from the European side of stories. I never knew there were Aboriginal or Black people in Australia, if I may use that. I think for me, the shock came in because I think it was in 1977 or 78 when I worked for Bougainville Copper as an environmental research analyst. Rio Tinto flew a couple of Aboriginal people from up north to Bougainville to see as a means to communicate to the Australians here that Bougainville people actually worked alongside Bougainville. So I remember clearly coming out of the mess, and I saw these two men. Now in Bougainville back in the 70s, it was right for us to joke about our color. So when I saw him, I saw this guy, and I said, "You must have introduced a new black. You've got the grey black, because further south in Bougainville they're blue black, and in central Bougainville it's black black. And where I come from is brown black. So you must have introduced brown black. Where did you come from?" Mm-hmm. And my girlfriend, the late Elsie Tamtu, who was from New Orleans, just hit me on the head, and I said, "This is actually an Australian black person." And I said, "What?" And that is when I first learned that we also had First Nations here who were same color as I am. And from that time onwards, I made it an extra special for me to learn about the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander.
Yeah. Mm. And what did Australians know about Booker Island or Bougainville?
I think having had one of the world's largest open cut mining, copper mine, I think that's how they found out about the. That's how a lot of people knew from Australia knew about Bougainville. But as far as the culture, I don't think many of them knew about the culture, the Bougainville culture itself, unless they took time to read about it, because Bougainville is a bigger island. Another tiny island is called Booker, which is about 60 kilometers long by 45 kilometers wide. And that's where I come from. And they're separated by a passage called Booker Passage, which is about 400 meters or so. So culturally, I don't think many people knew much about Booker, from unless you are an anthropologist or unless you went and worked with the culture. Yeah. So as far as they knew about Bougainville, nothing much. Even when I arrived in Australia, when I said Bougainville, they didn't know where that was. Unless you said Papua New Guinea or Solomon Island, then they would know. Mm.
And how common was it to see other Pacific people when you first came to Australia?
You see, when I first arrived, I lived in Sydney, because my husband's family lives in Sylvania, which is the Shire. And it was really difficult for me to find anyone. I came at the time when Bougainville crisis was on. So it was very difficult. So it was really a lonely journey for me, because I didn't know anyone. So the only people I communicated with were the Australians who came from Papua New Guinea. But as far as Pacific Islanders, it was very difficult. Mm. And then when I went to Melbourne, that was when I connected. Actually, it's an interesting story, because when we first arrived in Melbourne, I walked around and I could understand how my husband must have felt being an Australian white man, how he must have felt in Bougainville, because they were all black people, and he may have been one of the white people in the village. So the reverse role made me understand him further, because here I was, everybody was, majority was white and I was black. So at the beginning, I used to go walking along the street in Swanson Street in Melbourne, looking for black people or Pacific Islander. And then I came across a post office, which is now Target on Bourke Street. And when I went to the post office, I saw a lady who has now become famous. Her name was Kathy Freeman. She used to work there. So every day I would walk in there just to buy a 5 cents stamp so she and I could have a conversation. I caught up with her sometimes later when I worked at the NGV, but we just smiled and we didn't mention that, because it was something that I held dear to myself.
Yeah.
And it's something that I felt I didn't need to speak about, because she was there. And until I joined the Papua New Guinea dance group, that I actually connected with the Pacific Islanders.
Mm. And with so few familiar faces around you, how did you stay connected to Papua New Guinea or Bougainville?
I think what we have to understand at that time in the 90s, Bougainville was going through a crisis, Bougainville crisis, which is a war between Papua New Guinea and Bougainville. So it was a challenging time for me, because I also had to be mindful that the Papua New Guineans who were there may not have been too welcoming towards me. as we were fighting against each other. And it was through a dear friend that I still regard as a dear friend, actually, to Olive Tau Davis and L.V. Rowe. A lot of people challenged me as a Papuan, as a Bougainvillean, and didn't want me to be part of the community. And these two fought hard for me to be part of the... They made me feel welcome. And what they did was they pulled me into dancing. Now, I'm not really... Before I arrived in Australia, I wasn't that person who danced traditional dance back home, because culturally speaking, I grew up at that time because my mother is a patu, or the highest chief. Daughters of the chief did not dance. So I come from that era where dances were for everyone else but not us. So when I came to Australia, I felt that in order for me to be part of the community, in order for me to connect with my people, I had to join the dance group. And boy, at the beginning, when everybody will turn left, I'll turn right. And that was, in a way, it was deliberate again to do that. It was my way of saying, hang on a minute, everyone looks brown, I'm the darkest as they come. And if I make a mistake, everyone will ask about where I come from. So I will say, I come from Bougainville. And that was how, in my own mind, my own way of saying, hey, here I am, I'm also Papua New Guinea, but Papua New Guinea also includes Bougainville.
Yes, so true. And what helped you to create a new sense of home in Australia?
I think for me, home will always be Bougainville, or Buka for that matter, in my village. And the way I view life and I view my journey is, point A is Buka, point Z is Buka. So I'm on this journey. So I've always been in this journey with the mentality that even though I'm here, I don't belong. I don't belong here because it belongs to someone. I think I come from a generation where mentally the land belongs to someone. And I felt that because I'm a visitor here, I didn't feel I was part of this place. I still feel I'm a visitor here. And it's on my own. It's only because it's my mentality, because I know home is Papua New Guinea. And that will always be my home. And I'm just traveling, making this journey to go back home.
You're listening to Sisters Let's Talk with Natasha Metten on ABC Radio Australia. Today, my guest is Auntie Sana Riana Balai, a Bougainville elder, art scholar, and curator based in Brisbane, Australia. We're talking about how living in the diaspora shapes and keeps us connected to our cultural identity. Auntie Sana, being part of the diaspora means constantly code switching. How do you maintain your sense of identity when you work within Western institutions as well as with your Melanesian community?
I think the big thing for me is looking at where I am now and looking from where I come from. Not just place, but the journey that I've taken, and looking to the future. So my mentality, the way I look at it now is, I am here. What have I experienced through this journey coming here that I can pass on to the next generation so they don't have to go through what I've gone through? And that's adjusting to this place where you either become a figure or you... Especially when it comes to work and in art, you become that information box where people pick from to produce. When I started in art work, I'm not from the art background, but when I started there, to be fair, I didn't have any qualification in art. I still don't have a qualification in art. So I come in from a cultural perspective, and for that reason, I had to make a choice whether I create something not only for myself but for everyone else who looks like me, who talks like me, that they can be proud of in the future. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's how I have always looked at my place. I see myself as very fortunate to have been given an opportunity to work in an art art field with no qualification. And once I went in there, I thought, there are a lot of us coming who are highly qualified. Now, what can I do to make sure that there's a safe platform for everyone? So for me, a physical presence was my qualification in that space. As long as I'm in there, you see what I look like, you hear what I look like, and you see what the culture is all about. That was my main aim.
Yes. And you have a science degree, yet you have a long career in the arts. Mm. In what ways has the arts kept you connected to home?
I think, especially the objects in the museum, when I first got the job in art, for me, I've always hated art in school. And for me, unless it's got something connected to something, then my interest is there. Mm. So for me, in order for me to make sense of how I was going to operate in that space, as long as I had the objects there, I can talk about the objects, because where we come from, art is a foreign word. Because how do you separate objects from visual art, from singing, from painting, because that captures who you are. So for me, in order for me to operate in this field, as an art worker, as a curator, I had to think of it in a sense where I'm just going to talk about myself. That object represents me, so I'm going to talk about it as if I'm talking about myself. And that's how probably how I have survived in this field.
Yeah. And what role do you see the arts play in connecting Pacific Islanders in the diaspora to our region?
The most important thing is we are now here in Australia, and the culture the way we view art, our own culture here, may not be the same as what it is back on the islands. Having said that, island cultures is also changing because of the need to change. So one example I can give is every time I go home, I just come back from home, and 5 years ago while I was there, what I went back to is not the same. So culture is evolving and changing. Mm-hmm. So I think we have a lot of things to contribute back, because we come here, we hold on to what we brought with us. And that change is happening back on the islands. So we bring it back to give it back to them. When I first came here, it was the other way around. But as we evolved, the island culture, especially in Melanesia, Papua New Guinea is changing a and Bougainville, for that matter, is changing a lot. A lot of people now are looking into contemporary way of life. So how do we stay connected to the culture back home to here? I can only give an example, my grandchildren here. Mm-hmm. When I say my grandchildren, they're really my late brother's biological children, but I've now called them my grandchildren because my real grandchildren are back in the village. So what we do here, we do performance, we dance. I teach them songs and dance, and that's how we keep it.
Tell us about the importance of dance for you in building community, having been involved with various performance groups over the decades.
See, dance is also a form of storytelling. It's also a way of keeping the history alive, because when you look back at our history, we didn't have a written history. So everything was done through oral history. We had oral history then. And every storytelling was done through either carving or dancing or singing. So every song tells a story. And that's what I'm trying to encourage the younger generation of Buka Kitchen here, my grandchildren, is to still dance as the dances. It's a way of keeping alive and connected with whatever we had back home.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And how does it make you feel when you're sharing and performing traditional dances from back home?
It actually makes me feel I belong somewhere, and that somewhere is home. Mm-hmm. And when I perform in front of everyone else, I don't dance now, but when I used to dance and when I used to perform traditional dances, whether it was a song from Western Province in Papua New Guinea or the highlands of Papua New Guinea or Rabaul or Buka, it made me feel really proud to be a Papua New Guinean. Actually, from a perspective, I came in here and I was viewed as a professional person, and professional person in work and curating and art and science. But when I put on the grass skirt and the Sorry, I feel really emotional. When I put the headdress and the grass skirt, I felt really proud to be a Papua New Guinean, a Bougainville, or a culture person. If to me, it made me feel at home that I felt I belong somewhere. Yeah. And that was acknowledging my existence that's in my DNA.
Yeah, that's so true. And as an elder, what advice do you have to our younger generations who struggle with living away from their ancestral lands and not fitting into a Western society?
I think it works both ways. I would advise the young ones and also give a word of advice to the elders, such as myself. As elders, it's up to us to guide the young ones, because when we're here, we're called islanders. And when we're back home, we're known as Australians. So where do you fit in? So the advice I give to the elders, if I could start with that, is make sure you create that safe space for the younger children, the younger generation, to be themselves, to create something for themselves, that culture evolves. And for the younger generation, what I would say is, see where I put my foot.
Yes.
If it sinks, choose another one. And if it doesn't, step on it and expand and create something, because as long as you do respect the culture where we come from, the island. But having said that, culture is evolving. We are now in a stage where culture is no longer pure, because even in Papua New Guinea, there's intermarriage between Papua New Guinea provinces, and Papua New Guinea largely is patriarchal system, whereas Bougainville and New Britain and New Ireland and Milne Bay are matriarchal. So in that sense itself, it's different. So we're having intermarriage between all these cultures. So what I brought with me back in the 90s is not the same as what I'm living now and what will be in the future. So my advice to the younger ones is pay respect to your humble beginning and create something that you will be recognized for as one of the elders, because you will be an elder one day.
Yes.
So learn from us and expand from it.
Yes. Thank you for that. What's it like for you, Auntie Sana Rihanna Balai, when you head back to Buka or Loples na Yusana Plumama ground? What happens to your mind, your body and spirit when you're home?
I get really emotional when I talk about it, because as soon as I land back at home, I feel I don't have to be anyone but myself. Because when you're here, sometimes when you're away from home, especially in Australia, sometimes when you try to explain something, you're mindful of how the recipient will receive it. So you have to have a conversation where sometimes you have to explain things in a way where you probably don't really say what you need to say.
Yeah.
So when I'm home, I feel I'm home now.
Yes.
And it's a different feeling. It's a feeling that word cannot express. The challenge I feel now when I go home is because the culture is changing, and because Bougainville has just come out of a crisis, which is 20 years ago, we're still going through that, and it's the challenges, many challenges for the young ones is still there.
Mm-hmm.
So it also challenges me in a very different way, because I question myself. My generation were the recipient of a beautiful bougainville that my peers left for me. Now what am I going to leave for the young ones? Because we deconstructed Bougainville through the crisis. Now, what can we do to reconstruct it, to make it better for the younger generation? And it's a question that I alone cannot answer. But I need a whole lot of people to come together for us to build that. And challenging as it is, I try not to make those challenges take away the homey feeling that I have returning home.
Yes.
And being proud of who I am and what I am.
That's Auntie Sana Rihanna Balai, a Bougainville elder from Buka Island who works as an art scholar and curator in Brisbane, Australia. What a joy it has been to speak with her. Thank you so much for joining me, Natasha Metten, for Sisters Let's Talk on ABC Radio Australia, a weekly show by Pacific Island women for Pacific Island Women, where we get together to talk about the issues that are important to us. If you've missed an episode of the show, catch up on our podcast. Just search for Sisters Let's Talk wherever you get your podcasts or key us into your favorite search engine. Sisters Let's Talk is presented by me, Natasha Metten. Our producers are Kim Lester and Namila Benson, and Faleangafulu Inga Stunzna is our executive producer. Sisters Let's Talk is produced on Darumbal, Yagara and Turrbal land and the lands of the Kulin Nation people. We pay respects to elders past and present.